Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Supreme Court of the State of South Dakota, the Honorable David Gilbert, seat presiding, is now open for the transaction of any business that may legally come before it.
Good morning. The first case for oral argument this morning is in the matter of Benson et al. Versus the State of South Dakota. For the appellant, State of South Dakota, is Craig Eichstedt, a Deputy Attorney General, and you'll be making the argument for the state. And then for the appellee is a Mr. Joseph Becker from Lakewood, Colorado. Is that correct? Which one's?
Unfortunately, the court may recall Mr. Becker was unavoidably detained on contractual arrangements in Alaska. I have entered my appearance. My name is J. Scott Dedimore.
Okay.
And was admitted pro hac recently and will be making the argument for the state.
All right, Mr. Dedimore, welcome to South Dakota.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. The court will also note for the record that Justice Sabres has disqualified himself, and the court has appointed the Honorable Warren Johnson, the presiding judge of the 4th Judicial Circuit, to sit in his place. Mr. Eichstedt, you may proceed, sir, and you have 20 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. This case concerns road hunting and the amendment of a criminal hunting trespass statute that was successfully challenged in trial court below by the plaintiffs. The case involves principally statutory interpretation, and the main argument that the defendants and appellants present here is that the statute must be interpreted according to its plain words, as the court has repeatedly held. Plaintiffs challenged a subsection of the criminal hunting trespass law, which is 419.1.12. Under the United States Constitution. They claimed that it was a taking pursuant to the Fifth Amendment. The only portion that they challenge is the part of the statute that says that it's no longer a criminal hunting trespass, or it's not under 41-9-1, to shoot at a game bird if the game bird has either taken flight from the road right-of-way, originated from the road right-of-way, or was in the process of flying over the right-of-way. In the Rumsa case in 2002, this court...
Mr. Eichstedt, you don't disagree, though, that the plain meaning means that the road hunter could shoot the bird as it's on private property.
Not necessarily from a civil trespass standpoint, Your Honor. What it means is that it's no longer a criminal trespass, or it's been removed from 41-9-1 as a criminal trespass. But
even so, then, as a criminal trespass, wouldn't that be the plain meaning of the statute?
That it's no longer a criminal trespass to do that. That's correct.
To shoot over private property.
Yes.
Okay.
No longer a criminal hunting trespass. Now, it may still be a trespass under the general trespass statute, Title 22. That's a possibility.
I know you've argued that in your brief. I'm not exactly following that. Would you explain how that would work as a civil trespass?
Well, there are any number of possible remedies for civil trespass, and while we didn't catalog them in our brief, there are a number of them contained in the amicus brief of the National Wildlife Federation. It would be pursued as any other civil trespass action is, either an action for damages.
Well, but the elements of trespass normally, even a civil trespass, indicate that it's an illegal or an unacceptable entry onto your property. If this is defined as not illegal, wouldn't that be a defense to a civil trespass and eliminate the possibility of a trespass?
No, it's not a defense to a civil trespass.
Do you have any citation to that effect?
I don't believe that we have anything that specifically says that, but it hasn't. I don't know that that's previously been presented to the court in just those terms, Your Honor. But I don't believe that. By removing it from one single criminal trespass statute, that it can be said that the plain language of the statute grants some kind of a defense to a civil action for trespass, because those arise not under 41-9-1, the criminal hunting trespass law. They arise under the common law, and they remain and continue to arise under the common law, even though this has been accepted from criminal hunting trespass.
How does the landowner enforce their trespass violation then? They can't call the sheriff.
He can find out who the trespassers are, which he would need to do in any event. And from that standpoint, then he could bring his damage action. He can bring the civil trespass tort in court. While it's true that he wouldn't be able to argue anymore under 41.91 that it was a criminal hunting trespass, it is perhaps still a trespass under Title 22, so in that respect, law enforcement might be able to be involved.
So road hunters then are still subject to, every one of them who shoots over private land is subject to being sued, even though the state legislature has said it's not a crime for them to do that.
Yes, that's our argument, Your Honor.
What about the self-help remedy? Could a landowner go out there with their own private enforcers and say, well, I know the state says it's not a crime, but we're not going to let you shoot here. Could they do that as well?
Well, since you're saying it's
a civil trespass, do they have that right?
I don't think they could. They could cause a breach of the peace. They can certainly go out there and confront the person, but I don't know that the self-help would include any particular kind of force.
So there is a statute that says that it's a crime to interfere with lawful hunting. So the landowner couldn't really go out there on the road and say, I don't want you to trespass, stop shooting, because that would be, the landowner would be committing a crime then.
Well, I disagree with that, Your Honor, because what's lawful hunting, I think, may include not only the fact that it isn't a 41-9-1 crime, but it also could include the fact that the person must not be committing a civil trespass. I mean, something can be unlawful or against someone's civil rights as well as being against the criminal law.
And every time someone shoots over the fence line into someone's property, they're both committing a lawful act and an unlawful act at the same time.
Well, they're not committing a crime, but they could well be committing something that's against the law of civil trespass, Your Honor.
I guess I'm not clear on the state's point. Now, are you saying that there is, the state's position is that there is a trespass, or it could be?
There certainly could be. I mean, that's something that would need to be determined.
So that has not been determined at this point.
It has not been determined at this point.
Judge Tranel did not address that.
Yeah, the trial court didn't address that. There's common law that's contained in the Rumsa case that would be dicta in that case that talks about some restatements, but I don't think this court has actually held whether it was or was not a civil trespass.
So, following your argument then, as far as the standing issue, that they don't have standing, how far could the legislature go, in your opinion, then? What if they defined road hunting as within 100 feet into private property from the roadway?
I don't believe they can do that. Now, they could.
So
they
what's
could
the,
in our, well,
what's
excuse
the difference?
Me,
okay.
Sorry.
Yeah, explain to me the difference, because you're saying they didn't decriminalize it, and under your argument of decriminalizing it, what if they decriminalized hunting within 100 feet of the roadway on either side, which would be on private property?
I'd answer that by reference to the Chief Justice's concurrence in Reese versus Miller, where he indicates that statutory history says that there was no crime at all for hunting on private property until 1899. And the way that the crime has been set up since then has varied year to year. So to directly answer your question, I think that the legislature could decriminalize going on to private property for hunting purposes if it wanted to. It'd be similar to, say, decriminalizing bad checks or something else like that. Once it's decriminalized, the landowner, the person that's received the bad check, can still go to the civil courts, ask for a remedy, but he just can't have the state's attorney and law enforcement doing the work for him. So I don't think there'd be any limitation in the legislature completely repealing 41.9.1 if it chose to do so, but obviously it didn't choose to do that in this case.
Mr. Exton, can you point us to any other examples in the criminal law where the legislature has not criminalized conduct, but yet a civil remedy remains available? Are there things that come to mind to you?
Has not criminalized conduct.
Well, you mentioned checks.
Yeah, they have.
Are there other examples that you can think of?
The one example that's kind of interesting that doesn't exactly fit is dram shop liability, Your Honor, because that is one where the legislature took away the civil liability, but there's still criminal liability presently available. That's interesting because it shows that the legislature, at least in that instance, knew how to differentiate between the two. It didn't repeal the crime of serving someone who's intoxicated or serving someone who's underage, but it did take away the civil liability that arises from that. So there's one example where they clearly could differentiate. Now, the bad check law, I think, is interesting because it contains a number of conditions that are not present or that would not be necessary to prove civil liability. The check needs to be, for example, held for a certain amount of time. That's procedural, and in order to be a criminal bad check, it has to be for a present consideration, all those sorts of things, where if someone merely writes you as a business person a bad check, you can go in and sue them in civil court on it. You don't have to go through all of those additional steps. And this is really similar to that because the criminal liability is narrower, both in the bad check law and here. And that's what the legislature plainly has done with the words of the statute. Now,
let me ask you another question. Can you point to, I know you talk that the Bensons and the Mesmers here are attempting to get this court to, or ask this court to force the state to prosecute. Can you point where they say that in their pleadings? Now, my understanding is they've come to the court for declaratory judgment action.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And declaratory judgment action normally is just that. It's a declaratory judgment action. It's not, the court does not order anything in that respect. It just declares that this is what the statute means. Now, you're wanting to prevent them from standing to come to this court or the lower court for a declaratory judgment. Do you have any authority or cite authority that prohibits this court or somehow takes the jurisdiction of this court to declare that statute, the meaning of that statute?
I don't know that it's jurisdictional, Your Honor, because under the Viken case that we cite in the brief, the court states that it has the authority to declare statutes unconstitutional. But what we are talking about here is the adoption of a criminal statute or the taking away of criminal liability, decriminalizing an activity.
Isn't that the declaratory part, though, that this court would have to address? I mean, that's your argument, but you're using that to prevent standing, where in effect, isn't that this decision of this court? And in order to have that actually declared, that they do have standing to present it to this court for that decision?
We would argue that there is no standing, Your Honor, precisely because the plaintiffs are attempting to get the court to declare that an act which is not criminal is criminal. There is no standing for that because if the court could be forced to declare acts that are not criminal, according to the legislature, to be criminal, then there would be no limit to the court's standing.
But aren't they asking us to declare whether or not it's a taking?
Yeah.
That's true.
Well, then it's under our Darnall case, it's self-executing under the Constitution, and they automatically have a right to advance their claim. don't they?
They have the right to advance their claim for damages, Your Honor. It goes to whether or not there can be declaratory relief to have the court declare a statutory exception to criminal liability to be unconstitutional. And it's our position that the court cannot declare an exception to criminal liability unconstitutional. Now, it depends on how one characterizes the statute at issue, because if, as the plaintiffs claim and as they claim below, the statute is permission for the general public to go out and hunt, if that's what it is, then plainly there is jurisdiction to determine that, and they have standing to determine that, because they have every right to come into the court and have the court declare whether or not this statute permits people to hunt, actively permits it. But our argument is that the statute doesn't do that. The statute provides an exception to criminal liability, and that's all that it does. And
so if I'm following you, then what you're saying is the only people who would have standing would be somebody claiming to be a road hunter.
I don't know, not
the landowner, or does anybody have standing?
Excuse me.
Does anybody have standing then? Your theory?
Probably not to challenge an exception to criminal liability, because what the cases say is that one can only challenge a criminal statute when one is threatened by prosecution under it. Now,
but that isn't how they've drafted the pleadings, is my understanding. They're claiming that it's a taking.
They're claiming that it's a taking, but it's our view that they may not claim that so long as what we are talking about is an exception to criminal liability. So it depends. Whether they're standing depends entirely upon how one interprets the statute. Whether they're standing and whether the statute may be attacked depends on whether it's A, an exception to criminal liability, or B, an active permission for the people generally to go out and shoot over their property. And if
so, the court, are you saying then that the court can make that determination without ruling that they have standing? In order for the court to determine what that statute actually means, we have to have jurisdiction. In order to do that, somebody's got to have standing to present it to this court.
Well, and that may well be, Your Honor, and that would, I guess that would be fine with the defendants and with the state if there's no standing to present that. I mean, but in order to determine that you don't have standing, you would need to reject their version of the statute, which is that it's active permission to shoot over the land. And so that's what the case really turns on. And we look at what we do is we look at the plain words of this statute, and I'm sure that the court has read them and has looked at them, but all that it says is that 41.9.1 does not apply to fishing, trapping, or hunting on highways or other public rights of way, and that hunting on highways or other public rights of way includes fowling. And so what it does is it takes it out of 41-9-1 liability for the criminal action, and that's all that it does. And
does the Game Fish and Parks manual change that, though?
No, because the Game Fish and Parks Department has no authority to change the statute. In fact, they weren't given rulemaking authority. They didn't make rules. Now, the state feels that it's a good idea for them to give information on these statutes, but the fact that they've given information on it does not change the meaning of the statute, and so that doesn't change things. The statute means what it means.
But most of the hunters aren't going to read our statutes. They're going to look at the Game, Fish, and Parks hunting guide. Does the guide suggest that it's lawful to shoot over the land?
I think it may use that terminology, Your Honor. Yes, and our response to that is that Game, Fish, and Parks, in putting that together, is informing people of the contents of the statute, and that in doing so, they've done so accurately. Now, what the statute actually does, though, is for words by the legislature, and that's how it must be interpreted, is according to the words that the legislature put into it. I would just briefly, in the time that remains, talk a little bit about whether there's a taking, even assuming the plaintiff's interpretation of the statute, which of course we don't do. Our primary argument is otherwise, but we would argue that there's no taking here, and that's based upon the historic and continuing regulation of both road hunting and the use of the rights of way over the years. There has been there have been varying regulations, and in our view, this is just one more. And while it changes things somewhat in the course of regulating, the state has changed things from time to time and has produced different regulations for differing times. For example, one time before there could be a hunting trespass, there had to be posting. Now there doesn't need to be posting anymore. It's automatic. You need to automatically ask for permission. And this governs the use of the road, and we have also in our brief set out a number of ways in which the plaintiff's affidavits are in fact a little bit overblown, and much of the activity that they complain of is still illegal. Thank you. We would request that the matter be reversed.
Thank you, Mr. Eichstead. Council, you have 20 minutes.
This is permissible.
This is permissible.
Thank you.
You get dry throats in South Dakota once in a while.
We all do.
Okay.
May it please the court. I think it's first good to get off and let you know what exactly we want of you. We wish this court to declare and to find that Section 9-1.1 sub 2 makes shooting over and onto our client's land lawful. In doing so, it has effectively imposed a public easement on private land, and it has determined not to pay for it. Indeed, the poison pill said if you determine it's a taking, we won't pay for it, it's void.
But let me ask you right there, lawful. You use and emphasize the word lawful.
I do.
Do you mean lawful civilly or lawful criminally?
I think there is only one definition, and it is both. I can enlarge upon that if you would wish me to do so, Justice Center.
Well, there's many examples like bad checks where the legislature defines all kinds of different requirements before conduct becomes criminally unlawful, but yet it's unlawful civilly, and there's no taking and no problem there.
Well, I think there are a couple of answers to that, Justice. The first of all, I think let us be clear that nothing has been decriminalized. It is still absolutely criminal to shoot over and onto private land. Rather, what has occurred here is the state has confiscated our client's private land, made it a public easement, and allowed shooting over that public easement, and it has not paid for it. The bottom line here is that when the Rumsa decision came down, this court decided that the recreational easement that is provided by the initial RS-2477 grant to this state is 66 feet wide and that it includes hunting, but that the scope and extent of that easement is indeed 66 feet and does not extend over and onto private property. The legislature, at least some in the legislature, felt that this was not a sufficiently wide easement and thought that it should extend to the range of a shotgun, and therefore sought, frankly, to overrule this court by the simple expedient of saying, we will widen the easement. We will add 900 feet on either side of the easement that already exists, some 900 feet being, according to the hunting manual, the range of number 4 shot.
Do you agree, though, that the only way in which they did that was by decriminalizing that type of trespass?
No, Your Honor, I absolutely do not. First of all, we must get into...
Explain to me, do you agree that this is a criminal statute?
No, I do not.
You don't believe that 41-9 and the accompanying statutes are not criminal? You can't be convicted of a misdemeanor for violating those statutes?
I think you can, but I think...
Well, then if you can be convicted of a misdemeanor, how can you say it's not a crime?
Well, it certainly is a crime, but that does not answer the question of whether it is lawful or unlawful, which is the issue for the purposes of a taking. Well, rather, it begs the question.
Excuse me, then I go back to lawful.
Yes.
You have to be precise with us. When you use that word, you need to tell us whether you're talking about criminally unlawful or civilly unlawful.
I am talking about unlawful in the civil and the criminal law, Your Honor. If you allow me a moment, I'll try to explain that. But the situation here is what the state is arguing, and it assumes the conclusion. The state assumes that under Title 41, which governs all aspects of hunting, that there is no lawful hunting under that statute. There's only unlawful hunting. If I misspoke myself, there's no lawful hunting. There's only unlawful hunting. But when the legislature enacted Title 41, including Chapter 9 thereof, it did not displace in any way the common law. The common law is in full force and effect, including the right to the common law right of trespass. Unfortunately, that is not, has not been the law in South Dakota. In South Dakota, the law is to the contrary. It is that hunting is allowed except as prohibited or restricted by the legislature. This is inherently the difference between a regulatory statute in nature, which includes for its sanctions some criminal, some civil, and some which are of a regulatory nature, such as loss of license. Therefore, under the hunting law, because the hunting, they have occupied the field in effect, and what is not unlawful is lawful, or what is lawful is not unlawful, if you will. This court has spoken of the very subject in Rice v. Miller, in which it says the public has a right to shoot and to hunt on right-of-ways. In fact, then Justice, now Chief Justice Gilbertson, in concurrence, specifically stated that allowing hunting where the legislature has chosen to restrict or prohibit it has been the law of this state. The legislators who enacted this statute that we are concerned with absolutely agree. If we listen to the legislative debate, the debate assumed that what the legislature was doing was in conformance with a highly regulatory statute which has an extensive and comprehensive regulation of hunting in this state. They believed it was lawful. They said they were making hunting lawful, it was legal, it was right, they were allowed, they were permitted, and this engendered substantial debate over whether it constituted a takings of property. It assumes that there is no contrary common right to exclude. So therefore, what we get down to is to what degree is the common law of trespass left after Title 41 has regulated all aspects of hunting? We are aided in that by looking at the statutes of the state of South Dakota. 1-1-24 says the common law is displaced to the degree that is inconsistent with statutes. Section 2-14-12 assists us in determining when there is a conflict. It says, first of all, that South Dakota does not adopt the rule of common law that statutes in derogation of the common law are to be strictly construed. Rather, 2-14-12 says that when the legislature passes a law, that becomes the law of the state, quote unquote, with respect to that which it relates, and furthermore, that it shall be liberally construed to effectuate its object and to promote the general purpose of justice. Now,
would you then point to me the phrasing or the language in 41-9 any part of 41.9 that abrogates the common law prohibiting trespass.
Well, we don't need, under South Dakota law, with a liberal construction and with the inconsistency, we need ask only whether it is or is not inconsistent. And we have here a statute that regulates the who, what, when, where of hunting. I doubt that there's very or any much room for the common law to begin there. Indeed, the legislature under 41.1-8 has seen fit to say you may not interfere with hunting which is being lawfully engaged in. What is lawfully engaged in? Lawfully engaged in surely must mean that which is allowed and permissible, or as the state would have it, not disallowed, under Title 41, and in which event it is lawful. In which event, if a landowner goes up and tries to exclude them, irrespective of any common law rights they may have, they will be criminally prosecuted. And so it would seem very straightforward that the common law of trespass is entirely inconsistent with this. They have made it lawful. It is under 214.12, the law of the state and the regulations that are promulgated pursuant thereto are the law of this state. They have retained the common law in two specific instances. Section 9-9, not surprisingly, retains the law of negligence. And it says, if a hunter is hunting upon private land, in this case, I want to emphasize that our land is no longer private, it's now public, and so it wouldn't be a crime to shoot on their land because it's public land, because it has an easement imposed upon it. It include damages imposed by negligence. So if I, as a hunter, damage your property or injure your person, I'm liable in negligence. That's not too surprising. Section 9-8 specifically retains an element of the common law to the degree that it says, look, if you are engaged in unlawful hunting, that is to say, contrary to Title 41, including Chapter 9, it makes clear that the state's remedies, which are, some are of a criminal nature, some are a civil nature, they can impose their liquidated damages in civil court that require preponderance of the evidence proof for taking a certain game, or regulatory actions that they can take, such as taking a license. Anytime you have an all-encompassing, extensive, comprehensive regulatory statute, provides all sorts of sanctions, but it does not mean that compliance with the statute is lawful. Now, that being the case,
let me just ask you a question along that line. The state is arguing that the and says at least a couple times in the brief that the landowner still has absolutely all the rights that they've always had to keep somebody off of their property.
I'd reiterate, first of all, it's no longer their property. It's become public property. It's been nothing more than an extension of the 66-foot right-of-way to make it 1,866-foot right-of-way.
Well, it's not.
By definition, it's no longer private property.
If anything, it would be an easement. Is that, I mean, it's indeed still private property.
I would go so far as to say the logical extension of the state's argument is that the landowner has the right to exclude them from the 66-foot right-of-way, too. Because all the statute does under Section 9-1 is say it's unlawful to hunt on private property. Section 9-1.1 then, even before the amendment, said it is an exception to that lawfulness is to shoot on a public right-of-way. So there's been no right conferred. Basically, the state's argument is the state has, in Title 41, made no hunting lawful. And then when the RS-2477 grant was received by this state and the legislature did not see fit to confer an easement by its nature being the right to lawfully travel over, across, and under property. It didn't do that. All it did was to say, well, if you do hunt on the public right-of-way, it's not criminal. The logic that extends to the 66-foot easement also extends to the 1,800-feet easement that they added on to it. You can't, let's be clear, you can't have it one way, or it's one way or the other. And either, I suspect that a hunter who goes down to pick up his license, one of the legislators who sponsored this bill, would be extremely surprised to find out that not only did he have to get his license, that he have to get the hunting manual, but he also had to carry around with him a copy of Blackstone's commentaries to see what he could do and what he could not do. And I suspect, Your Honors, I don't think I understood all aspects of common law very well in law school. And after 30 years of practice, I have some doubt as to what it is in a lot of instances. And I really am not sure that the average hunter could make that distinction. That's why the legislature did what they did. As I said, 9-8 just said the state's remedies are not exclusive. If it's unlawful and the hunter does damage to your property, to the degree that you would otherwise have a common law remedy for that, we have not preempted the field to such an extent that you don't have a remedy. But what is unlawful is defined by state statute, not the common law. The common law conflicts directly with 2218-4, the trespass statute, that says you have a right to forcibly, with such force or violence as is necessary, to exclude someone who's committing a trespass. But this statute said it's not a trespass any longer. It's because it is now public property and you have no right to exclude, and they specifically took that right away by 41-1-8. And even if after the fact civil remedies, a suit in civil court were to occur, a taking has occurred at the moment the right to exclude has been taken by 41-1-8, which makes it criminal to do so. And therefore, it is an absolute taking. And what we have here is essentially the legislature widened the easement when they said you can shoot across it. To construe that is to be saying, well, we didn't do that. All we did was say it's not criminal. Your Honor, surely there is something that's lawful in this state that we don't have to look at the common law to determine whether it is or isn't lawful. It's the whole idea of when and to what extent does a legislature with a comprehensive and extensive statute regulating a subject supplant the common law? And we are to liberally construe that under 214.12.
There's another doctrine that this court routinely adheres to, that the legislature meant what it said and said what it meant. In other words, you read the statute as written.
Well, the statute as written doesn't address the issue whether... It does not address whether, if they decriminalize it, it has become lawful or not. All that's said is that we didn't make it unlawful anymore. It really begs the question. It assumes that the argument is, has the common law been displaced? The method of the remedy is simply a red herring in this case.
You know, in your brief, you state at page 19 that the hunting handbook places hunters and landowners on notice that hunting pursuant to the statute is not a trespass, and that hunters who hunt in this manner may not be prevented from doing so by landowners. I've got the manual here, and I can't find any language in there to that effect. Can you cite me to the part of the hunting manual that says that?
I think I may be able to do so if you allow me just one moment, Your Honor. I'm referring in the record to page 73, what would be page 33 of the manual, if you all have it there. And toward the bottom of the left-hand column, it talks to unlawful retrieval.
But this is not an unlawful retrieval case. You've made it clear in your brief that you are not challenging the unlawful retrieval portions of the law.
That's true, but if we read on, it says, to be lawfully taken, from a public road and right-of-way, the hunter must be within the right-of-way of boundaries when shooting the game, which may be originating from or flying over the right-of-way.
But there's no reference there. There's two problems with that. First of all, that's in the unarmed retrieval section of the handbook. And the second problem is there's no language in the passage that you just cited that speaks to trespass or says that it's not a trespass or basically says what you says it, you say it says in your brief. I don't see any language in it that says that.
Well, perhaps it doesn't, Your Honor. I believe that the Game and Fish believe that compliance with this manual is lawful hunting. I believe that 100% of the hunters who engage believe that compliance with this manual is lawful hunting. As I said, are we really going to take Prosser and Torts or Blackstone's commentary and carry it around?
Well, let me, I got to know the answer to this. Your time's about out. Can you point to any language in the entire handbook that talks about shooting on private property?
I'm not aware of one, Your Honor, and I guess if we are prepared to say that there's no such thing as lawful hunting in this state, other than as provided by the common law, and the common law has not been displaced, then I'd have to agree with you that's a relevant fact. Basically, what we have, 16 seconds. Does the court have any further questions?
Is every trespass a taking?
Is every trespass a taking?
Yes.
I'd have to ask in what context, Your Honor.
Is every intrusion
only
a taking?
Only when it's a permanent physical occupation that is either authorized or done by the state. Otherwise, it is a civil trespass. In this case, the state has taken private property, authorized a permanent physical intrusion, which is an easement, and see, I'm out of time. Did you want me to finish?
You can finish your answer to Judge Johnson.
An easement, whether the state uses it or the public uses it, is, we know under Nolan and the Coastal Commission and several other cases, is of a permanent nature. It allows a physical invasion. It is therefore a taking. No, taking must involve government, and it must involve government doing so without paying for it.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you. And thank you for hearing me.
Sure. You have 10 minutes.
Thank you. I think that in listening to Mr. Dettemore's argument, what we come back to the main point, which is that the statutes say what they mean what they say, and all that this statute does is withdraw from criminal liability the acts that it describes. Now, I think particularly worth addressing, perhaps, is the argument that Title 41 somehow occupies the field and precludes the intervening of other civil liability. I don't believe that's consistent with the language. There are points in Chapter 41-9 where certain types of civil liability are specifically set out, and in other contexts, the legislature knew well, even when they were addressing something as pervasively regulated as the sale of alcohol, how to differentiate between criminal and civil liability, and how to deal with them separately. And it seems to me that we can't talk about this statute being everything and anything to hunting, because the civil law still remains, and the civil law and rights of the landowners have been present since well before statehood, and as the historical review in Chief Justice's concurrence in Reese shows, there have always been available civil remedies. Now, these statutes.
I'm going to just interrupt you a minute on that. I guess this came up in Mr. Dettemore's argument, but if we follow your analysis that on the decriminalization versus whether or not it's a regulation or whatever, does this then mean that it would, in some respects, reverse some of our prior decisions, Reese for one, and our other decisions that have recognized the easement and the ability of the state to use that easement for hunting, the highway easement? And we would go back to that the owner, or the landowner, then owns the land to the center of the easement and can prevent any road hunting, or that can say that that's a trespass over their property.
No, Your Honor, because the easement existed not in these criminal statutes, but it existed by virtue of congressional legislation.
But that was highway, and this court defined that that could be used for hunting.
Yes.
Is that right? But we have defined that it was hunting in a declaratory judgment, that it could also be used for hunting. The easement was just for a highway easement.
Yes.
If we follow your theory, then, would that not reverse some of those or overturn those decisions, and that now the landowner has a civil remedy for trespass to the center of the road?
No. Because the court, when it was interpreting these easements, was interpreting the easement itself. It was not basing it on these criminal statutes. The easement itself has always been available for hunting according to the terms of the easement itself. And this court has interpreted those terms, and in interpreting those, it was interpreting not these criminal statutes, but the nature of easement itself. And that's always there, and it always will be there, and that's what the easement means. It means that hunting is available, and hunting is not available under these statutes. Hunting is available under the easement itself, as interpreted by this court. But the criminal statutes themselves, I still think that even under these statutes, the legislature has allowed for the taking of game within the road right of way. At the same time that it allowed shooting over the private land, or made that particular shooting not a crime anymore, it also said that when one is within the easement, one can continue to hunt there. So it's the easement, the hunting portion of the easement is based both on these statutes, which render it non-criminal, but also on the nature of the easement as this court has interpreted it from the beginning. It's our argument that to the full extent that it existed, civil trespass liability continues to exist. The court has not taken it, or the legislature has not taken it away, and the court should interpret this statute as what it is, according to its plain words. That is, that it removes criminal liability, and that's all that it does.
Mr. Eggs said that there's language in both 4199. And 9-8 about not abrogating other provisions of law, and one that says this section does not limit civil remedies available to the landowner. Do those actually apply to the facts in the dispute that's before us today, or do those only relate to unarmed retrieval?
I think they're applicable, Your Honor, only insofar as they indicate that the legislature knew how to affect the civil remedies. I mean, they reaffirmed it there. They wanted to make certain that it was there. But I don't think that it explicitly preserves that civil remedy. But it shows that the legislature knew how to deal with the remedies, and that if it had wanted to take them away, that it would have done so. But I don't think it's directly applicable, because that section 8 talks about unarmed retrieval rather than the other parts of the chapter. As I repeated several times, we think this court ought to interpret this statute in accordance with its plain words. And what it does is it takes this particular type of hunting out of 4191, rendering it something other than a criminal trespass. But it doesn't take away the ability to assert civil trespass. Now, whether or not this constitutes a civil trespass, as Chief Justice points out, probably remains to be seen and is for another day. But at this point, there's not a taking because the civil remedies are preserved. And we've also argued that there's not a taking because this is just a continued regulation of the easement. We'd ask that the matter be reversed and sent back to the trial court for purposes of either dismissal or entry of summary judgment in the defendant's favor. Thank you.
Mr. Eichstedt, I wonder, what's the status of the 1983 claim here? You know, I don't see that the trial court really ruled on it. It doesn't appear to me that there was a meaningful discussion or ruling on that, other than it appears in the final order.
Yeah, I don't think that was discussed. I suppose that would be the ex parte Young aspect of the case.
Well, I mean, is there a 1983 claim alive, or is that before us, or where is that?
I think the trial court ruled on it explicitly so that it's before the court, but there hasn't been a lot of discussion of that, Your Honor. You're correct about that.
There weren't damages proven or.
No, it's not a 1983 damage claim, I don't believe, under their complaint. What it is a 1983 claim for declaratory relief, which 1983 can also be declaratory relief as well as damages. And I think that's the aspect of it that's been decided. But I really don't believe that there's been any action for damages. And under the present status of the record, there couldn't be because nobody is sued in their individual capacity. If you're suing in the official capacity, then all you can do is have declaratory relief under an ex parte Young theory. On the other hand, if individuals are sued in their individual capacity because they individually deprived these plaintiffs of rights, which I don't think is even alleged, then there could be damages. But I just don't think there's a 1983 damage claim here. There's a 1983 claim for declaratory relief.
One last thing on that. Where did the privileges and immunities language come into this? I see the trial court ruled on that, but I see nothing in the briefs, nothing in the record that really is talking about privileges and immunities.
And I'm not certain about that either, Your Honor. I think what the it seems to me that the plaintiff's claim and the one that they've argued for unconstitutionality of the statute isn't really privileges and immunities, rather it's a Fifth Amendment taking, and that's what they're arguing for.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Court will be in recess for 10 minutes.